This netcast is brought to you by the 8 Days of Geek Network.
All of your ears are belong to us.
On this episode of Aerocode 8, the DOJ is suing AT&T. Lots of acronyms. Minecraft devs are against DRM. Yay! And those free apps could be killing your phone. Stay tuned. Good afternoon, good evening. Welcome back to another episode of Error Code 8. I'm your host, Jesse Miller, and joining me, as always, is the Techno-Gaelic, Sam Briggs.
Well, a Scotsman clad in kilt left the bar one evening fair, and one could tell by how he walked that he drunk more than his share. He fumbled round until he could no longer keep his feet, and he stumbled off into the grass to sleep beside the street.
Yay.
Sorry for my bad singing there, everyone.
Oh, that's okay. Anyway, all right, we've got a couple little stories to cover this week. Nothing huge, but we're going to start with, of course, one of my favorite things in the whole wide world, AT&T getting in trouble. Woo!
Yay!
It's nonstop. They're always in trouble for something. If they weren't such a douchebag company, they wouldn't be in trouble for so much. Beside the point. So the United States Department of Justice has decided to sue AT&T for what is considered improper IP relay billing. Now, for anyone who doesn't know, IP relay is basically the service that, like, a deaf person would use. Anyone who can't speak or who can't hear would use this to where they would type something in, and then an operator on the other end would get that information and read it off to a separate caller. So if customer A is deaf, can't speak, and has to call customer B, customer A types it in, the operator's in the middle, and the operator is actually on the phone talking to customer B. So that's IP relay. AT&T gets paid for IP relay every time they send someone through. Somewhere in the tune of $1.30 per minute. That's $1.30. That's pretty good. I mean, that's a pretty big chunk of change. Now, the FCC has it's always wanting the all telecom providers to basically identify registered users to make sure only registered disabled users are using the service, because something like this, being that you're typing a message, can be used for those, you know, wealthy Nigerian prince needs your help type scams. Because of this, AT&T is basically, the reason they're getting sued is because they did not do that. If someone said they were disabled, they immediately patched them through. That's more traffic coming through for them, which means the FCC owes them more money. So AT&T gets a whole lot more money out of this, and it's like we're talking millions of dollars. You know, it's a pretty good chunk of change. They're saying that close to 90% of the IP relay traffic was fraudulent. So, you know, this is a lot of money in AT&T's pocket that they weren't supposed to get in the first place. So the Department of Justice is suing the pants off of AT&T. Please, for the love of all that's holy, stick it to them. They'll just pass it on to their customers anyway, so.
Yep, and this is, AT&T is really running out of excuses as to why their network is so terrible.
Oh,
if you're completing that many fraudulent calls, that's that many more people who had a drop call who really didn't deserve it.
Exactly.
And I almost guarantee you, they're not dropping. Those calls don't get dropped.
Oh,
these fraudulent calls. These disabled calls.
$1.30 per minute? No way.
Yeah. So, yep. I hope they lose. I hope they lose hard.
I'm pretty sure they will. This doesn't seem like there's a lot of doubt going through this
one. And what's more is the fact that it's the FCC paying them, but it's the Department of Justice suing them, which means
exactly.
The FCC more or less just handed the Department of Justice a pile of paperwork and said, have a nice day.
Yeah. And you know how the DOJ loves beating up on AT&T.
Oh, yeah.
So go ahead. Do it, guys. Man, you just came off the canceling their T-Mobile merger. Why don't you just stick another foot up their butt and just go all out? So you can't tell I hate AT&T at all. All right. Our next one will also have to do with wireless gadgets. Granted, that's not a flawless segue, so I'm not going to push the button. The FAA has often has up until now, well, and you know, from now on also until they change it, had a rule that you cannot use any wireless devices, gadgets, players, anything electric until 10,000 feet. I've never actually flown anywhere, so I don't know how long it takes to get to 10,000 feet, but that sounds like a lot. Because of being bombarded by so many requests to get rid of this arcane rule that, it, you know, makes no sense because they say you can't use the devices, period. They've often said that, oh, the wireless networking could cause problems with our navigation and blah, 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 and the plane's wings will fall off and will plummet to the ground. But the thing is that if you turn off all the radios and go into airplane mode, it's called airplane mode for a reason. If you go into airplane mode, you still cannot use these devices until 10,000 feet. That is just, it makes no sense. No sense whatsoever. So the FAA has decided that they are going to take a quote unquote fresh look at the rules. They're not going to do it for cell phones. Cell phones are still banned up until 10,000 feet, and you have to keep the radios off. But for all the other little doodads, they're planning on fiddling around with the rules a little bit. Now, the problem is, for each device that is being used, they've said that what they are going to have to do is take each device one at a time into an empty plane and fly a little bit with it in the plane. And then land, switch devices, and they're going to have to do this for every single plane in the fleet, no matter if it's the same type of plane or not. Every single plane. I mean, I understand being safe, but where's the proof that any of these objects can cause issues?
Do you know where it originally stemmed from?
Where's that?
It used to be traffic control. This is, you know, during what would be the 90s when these rules, possibly even a little bit earlier than that, air traffic control used two forms of connectivity to connect with the plane, a close-range frequency and a long-range frequency.
Uh-huh.
And the rule originally stemmed from, this is back during like analog cell phones, I'm sure you remember those days.
Oh, yeah.
Where there would be interference caused, and the air traffic control could not communicate with the pilot.
Now, see, that makes sense.
Yeah. Now, since then, 20 years has passed.
Exactly.
We now have digital frequencies. We have a lot of anti-interference. They still have to go back and test, you know, because obviously you may have three runs of planes that were used with a good radio receiver that has the anti-interference modules built into them. And then the company decided to cut costs a little bit on this run of planes, and you can't tell that from the outside. And when you get one that doesn't have the anti-interference, you can cause a lot of problems. And that's the issue with having to test each and every plane.
Hmm.
Yeah, it is a hassle.
I understand it, but good Lord. I mean, haven't we gotten past this yet?
Yeah, once they've done the testing and the foundation is laid, then regulations can be applied not just to airlines, but to manufacturers, cell phone or service providers, and everyone can work together to make it safe for everyone. The fact that it's taken 20 years to get this to this point is absolutely asinine.
A little bit. So if you're interested in using your electronic device before you hit 10,000 feet, don't. They're just going to tell you to turn it off. Alec Baldwin, I'm looking at you. Mm-hmm. All right. We had Apple news. Yeah, even after the iPad announcement, Apple decided to give us even more news. This one is not, however, what you're going to spend your money on. It is what Apple is going to spend their money on. Apple has had a lot of money in the bank for quite a while, and everyone was always wondering what they were going to do with it. I mean, they had pretty much enough money to buy a small country. To be completely honest, I think it was in almost the $80 billion range in cash. We're not talking assets. We're talking cash in the bank. So they announced that what they're going to do, it's basically going to be a minor stock buyback. So that's, when I say minor, you know, for a company like Apple, that's $10 billion that they're going to put into buying back some of their shares. This, you know, will probably drive share price up just a smidge. And also, you know, it will make the company basically mean that they own more of themselves. So that's the plan behind that. Apple's always tried to be as independent as humanly possible. Ever since Microsoft had to bail them out, Steve Jobs made it a point to make sure that Apple had more than enough money in the bank to support themselves during hard times, just in case. He did not want to take another buyout from anybody. So
especially Microsoft.
Yeah, again, especially.
That was a very dark day for Steve Jobs.
Yes, it was. So Apple is going to be buying back $10 billion of their shares. I'm not sure how many shares it is, but you can do the math. They're like $600 a share now. So, also, something that people did not see happening, because Apple has said before that they aren't going to pay out a dividend on their shares. And some companies, you know, they don't ever pay out a dividend. Just owning the share is all you get. And if you sell it at a, you know, elevated cost, you get the money off that. Dividends, for those of you who don't know, is basically a set amount of money that would be paid out per share at a certain time during the year. So basically, it's an incentive, kind of like almost like a profit sharing, an incentive to own the shares. Apple's dividend is going to be $2.65 per share, and it's going to be a quarterly dividend. That means, obviously, quarterly, quarter, four times a year. Now, granted, you know, and with that kind of dividend against a $600 piece of stock, literally, you're talking about somewhere in the $1 million range to own enough stock to make minimum wage. So, you
that
know,
is still, but that is still an incredible payout compared to what most companies do.
This is very true. This is very true. And with the, like I said, with a stock price of $600. You're going to expect something for your money.
Yeah.
Now, this, other than it being, you know, wow, they're giving out a dividend and buying back some of their stock, there's really nothing else to this. It's just basically saying what Apple is going to start spending their money on. They plan on spending somewhere around $45 billion over the next 3 years on these plans. So, I think they probably got enough to spare. More than likely. All right. Here's another one. Okay, how many free apps do you have on your phone?
Me?
Yeah.
Almost. You know what? Let me grab my phone real quick. I'm going to exclude the pre-wear homebrew stuff.
Okay.
Because that's always free. That's donation-based.
Okay.
I have one.
One free app?
I'm looking.
Oh, you're counting. Okay.
I have ones that I've downloaded. One, two, three.
Okay. I got too many accounts.
No, hold on. So, okay. So people understand how many apps I have downloaded. 7.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
Everything else is homebrew community.
That's
stuff,
a pretty big ratio, though. So.
Yeah. It's
now, of those 3 apps, are they all ad-supported or are they just completely free?
Just completely free.
Wow. Congratulations. You are not the target market for this story.
Not at all.
I have...
Not only that, but my Pandora app doesn't play commercials.
Nice. Congratulations.
I know. Yeah, no commercials. I know. It's great. I have no ads anywhere on my phone. I'm a huge proponent of buying apps, though.
Yeah.
Always.
Me too. If it has a paid version, I'll try the free one just to make sure I like it. And if I like it, I'll buy the app immediately. It's worth it. Mm-hmm. The story here is that, and I honestly saw this coming, free apps drain 75% more power than paid apps. So I basically, having like, you know, the little ad pop up at the bottom, it's got to download that ad from somewhere. You know, so it's using network data to push data to you and all this good stuff, basically killing your battery just that much faster. So there's a good reason to go out and buy your apps, because you're killing your battery softly. Now, Sam, yep. Do you still play Minecraft, correct?
Yep.
All right. Well, how about this? Minecraft, the head developer, the guy who started it all, Marcus Persson, I believe, I don't know, I'm pretty sure that's how you say his last name, Pearson, something like that. Otherwise known as Notch. We'll just say Notch, because that's so much cooler. Anyway, Notch has said that Minecraft and Mojang Studios, I guess is how you say it, that he uses such weird names and everything. I mean, it's rough. Notch, would you tone it down, just a smidge? They basically said that they will not be using DRM, and piracy isn't really bothering them all that much. And Minecraft is heavily pirated, let me tell you. So, this is a guy who basically sold the beta of his game, promising that you'd get pretty much the full game as soon as it got out of beta. And he's held true to his promise and made a butt ton of money off of this. He has said, basically, like I said, that his development firm, his studio, will not be using DRM. Because they see it as a hindrance, it just hurts people instead of actually helping the business. This is completely and utterly true. My hat's off to you, Notch. Mm-hmm. That wasn't really a huge story, but I felt it needed to be said. And going from that, and by the way, this is definitely
Flawless Segue.
Because our next little tidbit is going to be pretty much what we're ending the show on. And this is about a 5-minute video, and yes, it's a video, but you'll still get the gist of it from the audio. There will be, I'll try to embed this actually in the podcast itself, or at least put a link. That way you guys can watch it if you want to. But this is Rob Reed at TED, T-E-D. It's the newest TED, TED 2012. And he's talking about copyright and the mathematics behind all the numbers that copyright companies use, saying, oh, we lose this much and this many jobs and all this good stuff. It's pretty funny because he takes it completely serious the entire time, and the entire time the audience is just about to lose it. So do you have anything you'd like to add to copyright information?
Just one thing.
Sure. I've been talking a lot. You talk.
For those of you out there who have the opportunity to download, say, you download an app on a market or you download a game on the internet and it is free and you enjoy the game, please look to see if there is a donate button to the developer somewhere. Go back, you know, find the website, find something. These people who take their time to code things right and then offer it for free, those people deserve a little helping hand now and then. Even if it's just $1, $5, $20, whatever it is you think it's worth, please take the time to do that. It helps them out tremendously. It makes sure that these good programmers who are taking their time to do this will keep doing it, and that's important to have.
Very true. I agree completely. If they have a donate button, just donate $1, you know? I mean, $1 is... So you would have bought the app for $1 if you knew what it did in the first place. So just donate $1. Why not, you know? So, yeah, definitely buy your apps if you can. Try the free versions. There's no harm in that. You know, I do that all the time. I try the light version. If I like it, I'll fork out the couple bucks for the, you know, the pro version.
Hey, and if you really want to help them out, you know, buy the pay-for version, but keep playing the ad version.
Exactly.
You can do that. It would probably be annoying to you because the ads really are annoying, which is why I try to buy any app that has ads, I will buy.
Very true. Very true. And I'm the same way. I usually will buy the app just to get rid of the ads. Because yeah, they're killing your battery 75% faster. Ha ha!
And everybody knows the Palm Pre, you can't have that. Not that we support any form of ads in our apps anyway. I just remember that.
Oh, okay, okay.
Hey, yeah, we're too old of a platform.
So much better than the rest of us.
Kind of. It just means nobody will make apps.
All right, guys. We're going to play this video real quick, and we're doing it live. So, Sam, if you have any comments while it's going, you just let me know.
Okay.
I'll try to narrate a little bit while we're going, just in case he shows something that that kind of gets lost in translation.
The recent debate over copyright laws like SOPA in the United States and the ACTA agreement in Europe has been very emotional. And I think some dispassionate quantitative reasoning could really bring a great deal to the debate. I'd therefore like to propose that we enlist the cutting-edge field of copyright math whenever we approach this subject. For instance, just recently, the Motion Picture Association revealed that our economy loses $58 billion a year to copyright theft. Now, rather than just argue about this number, a copyright mathematician will analyze it, and he'll soon discover that this money could stretch from this auditorium all the way across Ocean Boulevard to the Westin, and then to Mars. If we use pennies. Now, this is obviously a powerful, some might say dangerously powerful insight, but it's also a morally important one, because this isn't just the hypothetical retail value of some pirated movies that we're talking about, but this is actual economic losses. This is the equivalent to the entire American corn crop failing, along with all of our fruit crops, as well as wheat, tobacco, rice, sorghum, whatever sorghum is. Losing sorghum. But identifying the actual losses to the economy is almost impossible to do unless we use copyright math. Now, music revenues are down by about $8 billion a year since Napster first came on the scene. So that's a chunk of what we're looking for. But total movie revenues across theaters, home video, and pay-per-view are up. And TV, satellite, and cable revenues are way up. Other content markets like book publishing and radio are also up. So this small missing chunk here is puzzling.
Like $50 billion.
Yeah.
Since the big content markets have grown in line with historic norms, it's not additional growth that piracy has prevented. But copyright math tells us it must therefore be foregone growth in a market that has no historic norms, one that didn't exist in the 90s. What we're looking at here is the insidious cost of ringtone piracy. $50 billion of it a year, which is enough at 30 seconds a ringtone that could stretch from here to Neanderthal times.
Damn ringtones.
I have Excel. The movie folks also tell us that our economy loses over 370,000 jobs to content theft, which is quite a lot when you consider that back in 98, the Bureau of Labor Statistics indicated that the motion picture and video industries were employing 270,000 people. Other data has the music industry at about 45,000 people, and so the job losses that came with the internet and all that content theft have therefore left us with negative employment in our content industries. This is just one of the many mind-blowing statistics that copyright mathematicians have to deal with every day, and some people think that string theory is tough. Now, this is a key number from the copyright mathematician's toolkit. It's the precise amount of harm that comes to media companies whenever a single copyrighted song or movie gets pirated. Hollywood and Congress derived this number mathematically back when they last sat down to improve copyright damages and made this law. Some people think this number is a little bit large, but copyright mathematicians who are media lobby experts are merely surprised that it doesn't get compounded for inflation every year. Now, when this law first passed, the world's hottest MP3 player could hold just 10 songs. And it was a big Christmas hit, because what little hoodlum wouldn't want $1.5 million worth of stolen goods in his pocket? These days, an iPod Classic can hold 40,000 songs, which is to say, $8 billion worth of stolen media. Yeah. Or about 75,000 jobs.
Bet you didn't think that.
Almost makes you want to buy an Apple
now,
product.
You might find copyright math strange, but that's because it's a field that's best left to experts. So that's it for now. I hope you'll join me next time when I will be making an equally scientific and fact-based inquiry into the cost of alien music piracy to the American economy. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Very nice.
Oh, yes.
So, like I said, I'm going to put a link in the show notes for that video if you want to watch it. It's actually pretty good. It makes a lot of good points. I mean, the math that the MPAA and the RIAA are coming up with is just not – I mean, it just doesn't work. You know, I mean, if you just go by the numbers, the money and the numbers just don't work. They are lying. Companies do that when they think they're losing money. So,
oh, and the key thing to remember out of all of this is that the job loss, the thing is corporations were never going to create that job. That's not what the point of a corporation is. That the point is to get as much money to the board of directors, to the shareholders, and to the bank account as possible. And that means cutting jobs.
Exactly.
We would have never seen those 370,000 jobs created. They can say we could have. With this money, we have the or we would have had the potential to create it, but let's face the reality, they wouldn't have.
No.
Simple as that.
Of course not. No.
And in fact, they created jobs in the fact that everybody is now pirates. And who does not want to be a pirate? I mean, really.
What kind of little hoodlum wouldn't want $1.5 million in his pocket?
Yeah. You know, I'll go online now, I'll download a song illegally so that next time I fill out a resume, I can officially put pirate.
Yes. Hire me, matey. I would have went to the movie and seen it, but it was rated R. Wah, wah.
Yeah, that was bad.
I know.
Bad pun was
that
bad.
That was horrible. But that's okay. I'm cool with that. Anyway, Sam, tell the people where they can find, follow, and or stalk you.
Twitter, at the Manitou Man, Gmail, manitouman@gmail.com. Here, sambriggs at 8daysofgeek.com, and any other little nook and cranny of the internet where you see somebody creeping, you know, that one user who's not logged in on those forums, that's me.
I don't log in.
I really don't. I clear my cookies and my password's like 60 characters long, and it's just annoying.
Nice. All right. For me, the easiest way to find me would go to about.me/Jesse Miller. That's got all of my stuff on it. Also, you can go to Twitter. I am @PenOfDoom. You can email me, jesse@8daysofgeek.com. And then if you'd like to call us and leave a message or send us a text message, the number is 754-273-6397. And if you're still reeling about AT&T getting sued, which, I mean, honestly, who is? That number is 754-273-6397. All right, that's it for this week, guys. Join us next week when we bring you tech and all kinds of buttery goodness. Say bye, Sam. Just say bye.
Bye, Sam.
There you go. The music can't start until you say goodbye. Always makes me feel like Blade Runner.
It's to this day just reminds me of all the video games on the N64, all the shooter games.
Okay.